Thousands of years passed before Jason opened his eyes. He lay on something soft, rounded, insanely comfortable, like an acceleration couch upholstered in living scarlet moss that smelled of flowers and ripe fruit. Insects buzzed nearby, invisible, screened by gently waving ferns twice Jason's height. Through these ferns wove vines like garlands of flowers, blooming with brilliant yellow and blue and vivid orange in fantastic and delicate array. The far distance echoed with a long, mournful pack hunter's howl. He was on Yuuzhan Tar. He sat up and had to stifle a groan. He was sore, bruised from head to foot, and though his ribs had been expertly bound, moving gave him a stabbing pain in his side that slowly, agonizingly slowly, faded to a dull ache that throbbed all the way up into his neck. After a couple of seconds, he stood up. Beyond the ferns that had screened his bower, he found a short cliff stretching up two or three times his height, thickly carpeted with variegated mosses. Even cracked and stained with juices of unfamiliar plants, he could not mistake this stuff. This was what his whole world had been built from. Duracrete. This wasn't a cliff. It was a wall. He followed the wall a few meters to his left, where he saw clear sky through another screen of ferns. He parted the ferns, stepped through, and found an alien world spread beneath him. He stood on a ledge, one stride from a sheer drop that plunged more than a kilometer to a dazzlingly multicolored jungle of ferns similar to the ones that screened his bower. Flying creatures flitted from point to point far below him, hunting just above the forest canopy, too distant for his eyes, unaccustomed to such vast spaces, to make out their details. He happened to glance upward and forgot everything else, because that was his first sight of the bridge. From a razor-sharp, needle-pointed arc above the distant horizon, a mind-bending river of color swelled overhead. Following it, Jason craned his neck back and back and back. A titanic spectrum, cascades of azure and incarnadine, of argent and viridian, braided into an impossibly complex, impossibly vivid rainbow that filled a third of the sky before narrowing again to another knife-edged curve that vanished into the purple sky above the opposite horizon. Magnificent, isn't it? Vergère's voice came from just behind his shoulder, though he hadn't heard her approach. He was too lost in wonder and new comprehension to be startled. You know, Jason murmured, still gazing up into the sky. That's exactly what you said when you brought me into the nursery. Those same words, just like that. She briefly told him how the Shapers had been forced to give the Duryam immediate control of the seed ship, and how it had begun the breakup into individual ship seeds so quickly that there had been no time to round up the rampaging slaves. The Duryam itself had used their slave seeds to herd them to safety, fulfilling its side of the bargain it had made with Jason. Yes, hundreds died in the battle, but thousands of slaves were able to ride the ship seeds to the surface. Slaves who were to have been executed at the climax of the Teasel Pilyunchilat. You were magnificent, Jason Solo. A true hero. I don't feel much like a hero. No? How does a hero feel? You don't understand. In the nursery, once I started killing, he said softly, I didn't want to stop. That must be, I can only think that's how the dark side must feel. I didn't ever want to stop. But you did. Only because you stopped me. Who's stopping you now? He stared at her. I don't want to kill you, Vergère. I don't want to kill anybody. Just the opposite. I'm grateful. You saved me. I was out of control. You were not, she said sharply. Don't make excuses. What? Out of control is just code for I don't want to admit I'm the kind of being who would do such things. It's a lie. He offered her half a smile. Everything I tell you is a lie. She accepted his mockery with an expressionless nod. But everything you tell yourself should be the truth, or as close to it as you can come. You did what you did because you are who you are. Self-control, or its lack, had nothing to do with it. Self-control has everything to do with it. That's what being a Jedi is. You, she said, are not a Jedi. Being a Jedi isn't just about using the Force, he said. It's a commitment to a certain way of doing things, a certain way of looking at things. It's about valuing life, not destroying it. So is gardening. He hung his head, numb with memory. Look around you, she said. Look at this world, at the patterns of the fern forest, at the rugged curves of terrain, the braided colors of the rings overhead. It is very beautiful, yes? The sick dread that had curdled in his stomach when he found Duracrete beneath the moss slammed back into him. Where are we? Yuuzhan'tar, she said. Did you not understand this? No, I mean, what world was this before? She sighed. You see, but you do not see. You know, but you do not let yourself know. Look, and your question is answered. He frowned at the fern forest below, where mountain shadows stretched away from the setting sun. Those flying creatures were out in greater force now, in the twilight, and they circled higher and higher through the shadows, as though in pursuit of nocturnal insects. Then one swooped straight up in front of Jason and soared above into the darkening sky. And he could no longer ignore what they were. Hawkbats. He said, Oh. Those strange metric designs on the distant mountains. He knew what they were now. And the impossibly complex topography of the jungle. That made sense, too. Jason said, fainter now. Oh. Oh, no. The designs were viewports. The mountains were buildings. What Jason looked upon here was the shape of a single planet-wide city, shattered into ruins, buried beneath a jungle. And all he could say was, oh. Long after Yuuzhan'tar had turned this face away from its sun, Jason sat on the mossy ledge above the jungle, now shrouded in night. Flashes of bioluminescence chased each other through the shadowed canopy in jagged streaks of blue-green and vivid yellow. The bridge was impossibly bright, impossibly close, as though he could reach up, grab on, and swing from one of its braided cascades of color. This was the most beautiful place Jason had ever seen. He hated it. He hated every bit of it. Even closing his eyes didn't help, because just knowing it was out there made him shiver with rage. He wanted to burn the whole planet. Brooding, he sat through the long, slow roll of the night. Some unknown time later, by the wheel of the stars, constellations still mockingly familiar over this bitterly foreign landscape, many hours had passed unmarked. He asked, What now? Verger answered him from the darkness within a bower of ferns. Though no words had been exchanged between them since twilight, her voice was clear, chiming, fresh as always. I have been wondering the same. No games, Verger. Not anymore. Is what has happened such a mystery to you? I'm not an idiot. You're training me. He made an irritated gesture, a flick of the wrist as though tossing away something nasty. I just don't know what you're training me to do. You are free to do or not do what you will. Do you understand the difference between training and teaching? Between learning to do and learning to be? Why can't you just explain what you're trying to teach me? Is it what the teacher teaches? The darkness itself seemed to smile. Or what the student learns. He nodded slowly, more to himself than to her. How long before the Yuuzhan Vong arrive?
Look around you. They are already here.
I mean, how long before something happens? How long can we stay here?
That depends.
A soft chuckle came from the darkness.
Here, look at this.
Out from the shadows flew a pale, irregular object, half the size of Jason's fist. It curved through a slow arc, gently tossed. Jason caught it instinctively. In the clear light reflected by the bridge, he found the object to be rough-textured and lumpy, like a rounded hunk of limestone. It was a slave seed, a mature slave seed, his slave seed.
You cut it out of me
while you slept.
You were unconscious for quite a while.
Vergère moved slowly out of the shadows and crouched at his side.
Are you all right?
I'm... Jason shook his head blankly. I mean, thank you, I guess. He got up. He parted the ferns, moving back into the night shadow beneath them, and found his way to the moss-covered wall. 3 paces from the corner, his scraping fingers revealed a vertical crack, straight as a laser, bordered with metal strips. Beyond the crack, the wall became durasteel instead. Jason felt around on the wall at about waist height until his fingers closed on a manual release. He turned it, pushed, and the durasteel door slid aside with an exhausted groan.
What are you doing?
Jason didn't answer. Beyond lay a hallway that smelled of mildew, dimly lit by bulbous growths of phosphorescent lichen, its floor patched with ratty, insect-eaten carpeting. It had been years since he had prowled the lower levels with Jaina and Loey, Tenel Ka and Zek, but the smell was unmistakable. At the far end of the hall, an open arch led to emergency stairs. Halfway down the first flight, he paused, sighing.
You coming or what?
Of course. Vergère appeared at the stairtop behind him, smiling broadly in the bridge light.
I was only waiting for you to ask.
This is Jason Solo.
The Master Shaper, Chigang Hul, stared in open horror at the image in the dwarf view spider's sack of optical jelly.
This is the Jason Solo of Duro, the slayer of the Voxin Queen, the Jedi sought by Tsavang La.
It is.
And this is the same Jedi who sparked the slave revolt that came within a Krista destroying the seed ship? The slave revolt that killed hundreds of our holy caste? The slave revolt that spat vicious infidel scum across my pristine planet?
Your planet, Master Shaper.
The shaping of this world is my honor and my task.
Chigang Hul snarled.
Until that work is done, every living thing in this stellar system answers to my will. Even the fleet. Even the world brain. If I choose to call this planet mine, who dares argue?
Who?
You?
Oh, not I.
How did he come to be here? How has he survived? It has been weeks since Seedfall. This dangerous Jedi has been running loose all this time. Where has he been? Why have I not been informed?
On the far side of the dwarf view spider, Executor Noma Noor brandished his imperturbable needle-toothed smile.
The War Master orders that you bend all available resources toward his apprehension.
Orders, does he?
Chigang Hul's headdress bristled aggressively.
Until he comes to take possession of this world, I am the ultimate authority here. We'll see about his orders.
Call it a suggestion, if you like.
Noma Noor leaned forward, opening his hands, the perfect image of friendly reasonability.
Nonetheless, you are, as you say, responsible for the shaping of Yuuzhan'tar. How you meet this clear and immediate threat is, of course, entirely up to you. Chigang Hul scowled.
Where is he? You know, don't you?
Of course. Again, Nomanor displayed his needle-pointed smile. I was only waiting for you to ask.
There was something wrong about this crater. Jason swallowed. I have a bad feeling about this.
And well you should.
Vergere hopped back to him and settled on the lichen beside him.
No place on this planet is more dangerous.
Something about the Vong life down in the crater bothered him. He wasn't sure what it was, couldn't be sure. Even after weeks in the nursery and weeks more on Yuuzhan'tar, he was far from an expert. He'd avoided contact with the Vong life whenever possible. Much of it had unpleasant properties. The tea-smelling purple sap that had bled from the Duracrete moss, for example, had turned his hands into masses of blistered welts for 3 days. He and Vergere had seen the Yuuzhan Vong now and again, and not only shapers tending their new planet. Warriors patrolled even the mid-levels, armed, shivering with disgust at the machines through which they were forced to march. For a time, Jason had wondered if they might be searching for him personally. But as their trek lengthened, they began to come across signs that he wasn't the only fugitive lurking in the deep shadows below the zone of destruction. Fresh tracks in the dust, caches of food recently picked over, wreckage cunningly arranged to look random while it concealed hiding places within. Across his back, he wore a sizable knapsack, plated from strips torn from the robe skin. The strips had healed in place, making a living pack that never broke or wore out. In it, Jason carried a few useful items they'd scrounged. A glow rod, a pair of electro-binoculars, a handful of power cells, and his prize, an MDS personal datapad. Though it was ancient, a 500 series, hopelessly obsolete, and most of what it was loaded with seemed to be instructional games, simplified image generators, and other kid stuff, there was one useful program. An interactive hollow map of Coruscant. All right, I give up. What is it about this place? What makes it so dangerous? Vergere touched his arm and, with a gesture, directed his attention toward a thicket of what looked like coniferous shrubs. On the slope around the thicket, a small herd of agile-hoofed, reptile-like creatures sprang from rock to rock, cropping nervously at the sparse moss. An instant later, he found out what had been making them so nervous. A massive bipedal tentacle-faced predator lunged out of the shrub thicket with astonishing speed. It seized the nearest of the hoofed reptilians in powerful prehensile forepaws, its blade-tipped mouth tentacles stabbing and sawing to swiftly slay and disjoint the captured animal, carving it into bite-sized hunks. As the rest of the herd bounded away, the predator settled down in the slanting sunlight to devour its kill. That is why this place is so dangerous, Vergere said, with a hint of a challenging smile. It is filled with what you would call the dark side. I should say, the dark side is very, very powerful here, more powerful than anywhere else on this planet. As powerful, perhaps, as it is anywhere in the galaxy. That's not the dark side, Jason said. A predator hunts to feed itself and its family. That's just nature. And the dark side isn't? I thought the danger of the dark side was that it is natural. That's why it's easier than the light, yes?
Well, yes, but...
Is what you have seen not the exemplar of the dark side? Is this not what you fear so much? Aggression, violence, passion...
You want to know what the real dark side would look like? If that predator had slaughtered the entire herd, just for the fun of it, for the joy of killing.
Do you think this predator takes no joy in its successful kill? Jason watched for a moment as the predator seemed to shiver with delight in its meal. Jason's answer was interrupted by a shattering thunderburst that sounded like the whole sky had exploded. What was that? Verger pointed into the limitless purple above the arch of the bridge.
There.
Yorick coral vessels, the size of the Millennium Falcon, whipped through broad looping arcs around the crater, tracing an impossibly complex rosette. And all of them spat bulbous objects like seed pods, colored the same purple as the sky, in a continuous stream. Now the shell of one seed pod began to peel back, like an Athorian star flower opening toward the sun, revealing tangled wads of white filaments like silkweed. The silk unraveled swiftly, releasing its seeds to the wind, trailing long, long streamers of white fibers. It was a Yuuzhan Vong warrior. The white silk strands trailing above it snapped open into a parachute canopy. Soon all the seed pods had blossomed, dropping a round dozen warriors apiece. Hundreds, thousands. Great. We've stumbled into their airborne infantry training camp. Could have been worse, huh? Could have been an artillery range.
Jason. There was a hard, cold darkness in Verger's voice that he'd never heard before. She said, "This is no training exercise. They are hunting for you."
"All this?" he murmured. "All this just for me?"
"You now get the first hint of how important you are."
He met her gaze steadily. "Well, somebody thinks so anyway. Any suggestions?" Verger nodded, turning away to gaze once more upward.
"There seems to be an updraft from the crater. Perhaps something to do with the strange storm. It's blowing the pod troopers outward, toward the rim of the crater and beyond."
"So?"
"So, if you are to escape them, there is only one way you can go."
She unfurled a hand toward the interior of the crater.
"Down."
Lightning blazed overhead, and thunder slammed the crater floor hard enough to shake the ground. The Yuuzhan Vong were coming. Whole squads of warriors had come bounding over the crater's rim before Jason and Verger had made it even halfway down the inner slope. Worst of all was that he could feel the Yuuzhan Vong closing in. The center of his chest was hollow, an empty space where the slave seed once had been. If he changed his breathing, if he closed his eyes, if he thought about that hollow, directed his attention into the emptiness at his center, somehow that brought another sense to life. He couldn't have described the feeling. There were no words exactly for how it felt. The slave seed had sent fibers throughout his body, had woven itself into his nervous system until those fibers were an inextricable part of who he was. But those fibers vibrated to a life foreign to this galaxy. He could feel the Yuuzhan Vong swarming down the crater's slopes, could feel them slogging through the thunderstorm in the crater's center. He felt the sizzle of alien stress hormones coursing alien veins. He felt one shortness of breath as a warrior slipped around a blind corner that might hide a fugitive Jedi. He felt one's black rage at the death of comrades in the nursery, and his heart echoed with another savage lust for vengeance. He felt them all. Like he was all of them, and all of them were him, at the same time. He felt a fierce rise of predatory joy as a warrior raised his amphistaff and crept toward a small white-robed human shivering in a corner at the meeting of two broken walls. And only when a tall shadow loomed through the curtain of rain right in front of him did Jason realize that the small white-robed human who was about to die was himself. Lightning blasted overhead as he twisted, and the amphistaff blade only scored his ribs before stabbing deep into the duracrete of the wall at his back. Jason swung his knapsack two-handed and slammed 15 kilos of cans and equipment into the warrior's face. The warrior snarled and swung his knotted fists. Jason flicked the first punch aside. The second, he parried with an open palm as he stepped forward, swinging his own doubled arm so that the warrior's knuckles slammed into the point of Jason's oncoming elbow. The warrior howled as his knuckles shattered. "I can do this all day,"
He could. The warrior might as well have been a part of Jason's own body. He let himself go, moving light and easy, counters to every attack as clear and obvious and predictable as a form he'd done 1,000 times. Like training with Jaina, when their force talents and their twin bond had made them practically one person. More warriors sighted the fight, the dance, and Thudbugs snapped through the air. And Jason actually felt he should apologize as he gracefully faked the warrior off balance and then took his outstretched arm and spun him into their path. The Thudbugs hit him like hammers. Von Doom crab armor saved his life, but transferred enough hydrostatic shock to snuff his consciousness like a switched-off glow rod. Jason felt that too, an eye flash of blackout that staggered him. When his eyes cleared, 3 warriors had him boxed. Knowing how they would attack wouldn't help. No one alive could move fast enough to dodge. The warrior slashed at him, amphistaffs lengthening with whiptrack speed. None of the blades even grazed him. To the nerve nodes that served as all 3 Amphistaff's primitive brains, Jason suddenly appeared to be a small, disturbingly misshapen, but still unmistakable Amphistaff polyp. Uncounted millennia of natural selection had hardwired Amphistaffs against cutting polyps. Jason took 3 running steps for momentum toward the one on the left, and sprang into the air. The warrior's instinctive reaction to lift his Amphistaff and spear Jason through the guts did him no good at all, because the Amphistaff dropped limp between his hands, and the warrior could only gape in astonishment as Jason slammed both feet into his chest and flattened him as if he'd been hit by a speeder. Jason hit the ground running and never looked back. They came after him like hungry rancors, snarling fury. This, he said to himself, would be a really good time for Vergère to show up. As if summoned by his thought, an invisible hand shoved his shoulder, knocking his headlong dash into a diagonal stagger. Before he could recover his balance, an invisible rope hobbled his ankles and brought him crashing to the ground, which collapsed under him with a dull rip of rotten fiber tile and dumped him headfirst 4 meters down to a damp stone floor that he hit like a cargo sack. A section of wall slid aside, revealing another room beyond, dimly lit by glow globes in conservation mode. The light from the far room haloed a small, slim, avian silhouette in the doorway.
Vergère?
Yes. Slowly, he pulled himself up. No bone seemed to be broken, but his whole body ached. You couldn't have just maybe said, "Hey, Jason, run this way." Her head canted a centimeter, and her crest seemed to glow a deep burnt orange. She extended a hand toward him.
"Hey, Jason," she said, "run this way."
After 1 last glance through the hole above at the black lightning-lashed clouds, he did. Deep into the planet, deep into the darkness, running. Sweat burned in Jason's eyes, blurring Vergère's back. She streaked ahead, turning corners, ducking through doorways, diving down stairwells, leaping into abandoned turbo lifts to slide the guardrails, and he followed desperately. Deeper into the planet, deeper into the darkness, running. That calm open hollow at his center evaporated somewhere along the way. He didn't feel the Yuuzhan Vong anymore. Gasping, losing Vergère and catching sight of her again, his sprint dipping into a stagger, he couldn't know if the Yuuzhan Vong were gaining, falling behind, circling ahead. His imagination crowded the corridors at his back with fierce sprinting warriors, but to look behind, risk losing Vergère forever. Daggers of fire stabbed into his lungs with every step. Ragged black blots danced in his vision, growing, blending, twisting until they suddenly billowed and swallowed him whole. Deep in the darkness. He awoke on the floor. Warm rain trickled down his cheeks as he sat up. Vergère crouched nearby, half-shadowed in the weak amber light from a single glow globe well down the corridor.
I... Jason's eyes drifted closed, and opening them again cost him tremendous effort. His head thundered like the storm above. The corridor swirled around him, and darkness pressed in on his brain. I can't get my breath. No? I can't keep up, Vergère. I can't draw on the force like you do. I can't get strength. Why not? You know why not.
Black fury ignited his heart, blood steaming in his head, spinning him to his feet. Two strides put him above her. You did it to me. I am sick of your questions, sick of your training. He pulled her to her feet, then off her feet, holding her dangling above the floor so close that his teeth might as well have been clenched in her flesh. And most of all, he growled, low, murderous, I am sick of you. And Jason discovered that his hands were locked around her throat.
His hands sprang open, and he took a step back, and another, until his back came hard against the sweating stone of the wall. Vergère's voice was warm as a kiss. I told you, here, the dark side is very, very strong.
The dark side? Jason lifted his head. His hands shook, so he clasped them together and pinned them between his knees.
Aye, Vergère, I'm sorry.
For what?
I wanted to kill you. I almost did.
But you didn't.
All the Yuuzhan Vong can do is kill me. But the dark side...
Why is it to be feared so?
He turned his face away. My grandfather was a lord of the Sith.
Anakin. Little Anakin. A lord of the Sith. Oh, could it not have been otherwise? What a tragedy. What a waste.
Jason stared at her in turn, his mouth hanging open. You say that like you knew him.
Knew of him more. Such promise. Do you know, I met him once, not 500 meters above where we now sit. He couldn't have been more than 12, perhaps 13 standard years old. He was so alive. He burned.
500 meters above us? What was this place?
Do you not know? Has this been lost as well?
She touched the wall nearby, her fingers skittering through a complex pattern on a sweating rectangular slab, which slowly swung wide, opening a doorway into a gloom-filled chamber beyond.
This way.
The chamber threw back a dark resonance, as though she spoke beside a drum. Lost in wonder, Jason stepped past her into the darkness.
This was the Jedi Temple.
This? Awe squeezed his chest, and he floundered in the dark. He had to gasp harshly in order to speak.
You... You're a Jedi.
No, I am not. Nor am I Sith. In the darkness, her voice seemed to come from everywhere at once. He turned, seeking her blindly.
No more games, Vergère.
I tell you nothing but truth.
She sounded so close by that Jason reached for her in the dark.
I thought everything you tell me is a lie.
Yes, and the truth.
This time her voice came from behind him. He whirled, extending his hands, but found nothing he could grasp.
No games, he insisted.
There is nothing that is not a game. A serious game, to be sure. A permanent game. A lethal game. A game so grave that it can be well played only with joyous abandon.
But you said...
Yes, it has never been a game. And it always has. Either way, or both, you had better play to win.
How can I play if you won't even tell me the rules?
There are no rules. But the game does have a name.
She said from the opposite side of the room.
We are playing the same game we have been playing ever since Merkur. We are playing, who is Jason Solo?
If that's the game, he said, I can end it right now. I know who I am, Vergere.
Do you?
Yes, he said solidly into the darkness. I'm a Jedi. A long, long silence in which he seemed to hear the entire room drawing a slow, slow breath.
Indeed,
she sounded sad.
Then the game is over.
Really? He said wearily. It is?
Yes,
she sighed.
And you lose.
The room burst to light. After so long in the dark, Jason felt like he was being jabbed in the eye with a piece of the sun. Slowly his eyes cleared. The room was larger than he had thought. And it was full of Yuuzhan Vong. He turned to Vergere. Beyond a ring of warriors, she stood companionably beside a medium-sized male who wore a long, loose-fitting robe skin of black. Jason had seen this male before. He had seen this male on Duro, with Leia's lightsaber behind his belt. He had seen this male on the world ship at Merkur. He knew this male's name, and he tried to say it. Tried to say. But before he could even open his mouth, a hot tidal surge of red billowed through him and washed away the world. Jason did not swim in the red tide. He floated, drifting, spinning in the eddies, tumbling in the surf. The red tide ebbed, waves washing out, and he bobbed to the surface. The red tide drained from his head, leaving him gasping on the floor. His hands hurt. He looked at them, but he couldn't quite see them, or he couldn't quite make sense of what he saw. His eyes wouldn't quite focus. A circle in the middle of his palm, a disc about the size of a power cell, was blackened, cracked, oozing thick dark blood. Wisps of smoke coiled upward from the cracks.
How does it feel, Jason Solo?
The voice was thin, ragged and harsh, rasping, broken by coughs. The voice was familiar. The voice was Vergere's.
To once more touch the Force.
She lay crumpled on the floor a few meters away, just within a ragged archway lipped with jagged stone, as though some incomprehensibly powerful creature had trampled her as it crashed through the wall. Broken stone littered the floor.
Vergere!
He was at her side without knowing how he got there.
How? What happened?
A sickening conviction clotted in his guts.
Did I?
His voice trailed off.
He remembered.
Through a fever dream haze, red-soaked images leaked back into him. The room filled with Yuuzhan Vong warriors. Vergere standing beside Nome Anor as though the two knew each other. As though they were co-workers, comrades, friends. Nome Anor had said something to her and something to him, but betrayal had hammered any hope of meaning from his brain. He remembered a long gathering breath, inhaling a galaxy of hatred and rage. And he remembered channeling that whole galaxy of rage down his arms and hurling it at Vergere. And he remembered how good it had felt.
Vergere.
It had been so easy to hurt her. So simple. Tears spilled onto his cheeks.
I warned you, didn't I? I warned you. The dark side. Don't make excuses.
Her voice was even fainter now. Breathier. More ragged. The wall of rubble closed off most of the chamber. Tumbled hunks of duracrete fallen in a steep slope from uncountable floors above. The ceiling had collapsed, he remembered that much. remember the roar, the pounding, the dust and flying splinters of stone. No. Wait. It hadn't collapsed. He had pulled it down. He remembered the wild joy of release as the power of the storm had roared into him and through him and became a mad vortex within the underground chamber, lifting stone and brick and chunks of duracrete to whirl and batter and slash the Yuuzhan Vong, pounding the warriors with pieces of the planet that had once been Jason's home. He had buried them alive, all of them, and he didn't care. The dark side called to him, a shadow worm whispering promises of ecstasy as it ate into his heart. He shook himself violently and lurched to his feet. I have to get out of here. Vergère's eyes seemed to clear then, and a hint of a smile curved her lips. The dark side? It's too strong for me here. I warned you. I warned you what could happen.
You see... But you do not see. Jason, why would the Jedi Council build its temple upon a nexus of the dark side?
Vergère, I... He shook his head helplessly. I don't have time for guessing games.
No guessing, she said. The answer is simple. They wouldn't.
He went very, very still.
What do you mean?
I can feel the dark side here. I touched the dark side and it touched me.
No. What you feel is the Force. This is the shameful secret of the Jedi. There is no dark side.
Vergère, I know better. What do you think just happened here?
The Force is one, Jason Solo. The Force is everything, and everything is the Force.
He couldn't let himself think it. It's a lie.
No. Search your feelings. You know this to be true. The Force is one.
But he could feel the dark side. He was drowning in it.
What you call the dark side is the raw, unrestrained Force itself. You call the dark side what you find when you give yourself over wholly to the Force. To be a Jedi is to control your passion. But Jedi control limits your power. Greatness, true greatness of any kind, requires the surrender of control. Passion that is guided, not walled away. Leave your limits behind.
But the dark side.
If your surrender leads to slaughter, that is not because the Force has darkness in it. It is because you do.
He could feel that she was right.
The only dark side you need fear, Jason Solo, is the one in your own heart.
He threw himself past Vergère into the hallway and fled, running. Home. The Solo apartments, not far from the ruined hulk of the Imperial Senate, still stood nearly intact. Home was where Jason had been heading ever since he'd woken up under the bridge. Where else did he have to go? He'd been half expecting, all these weeks, that reaching the place where he'd grown up would mean something. That he'd find some kind of safety there. Some kind of answers. Is anything worse than finally reaching home and finding that you're still lost? He didn't even have the strength to cry. He fell into the black hole.
Eons passed, or nanoseconds. Within the black hole, there was no difference between the two. Eternity within the dark. Information infell across the event horizon. a voice. What is real? What is illusion? Where is the line between truth and lie, between right and wrong? It's a cold and lonely place, Jason Solo. The void of not knowing.
Jason opened his eyes.
Vergere, how did you find me?
She had settled, feline-like, upon the Solo dining table, arms and legs folded beneath her.
I do not share our master's prejudice against technology. Portions of the planetary database survive in memory cores. Discovering the home address of the former chief of state was no great trick.
But how did you know? How did you know I'd come home?
It is an instinct of all pack animals. The mortally wounded crawl back to their own dens to die.
Wounded?
With the greatest wound a Jedi can suffer. Freedom.
Another riddle. He had no strength for riddles.
I don't understand.
When you always know what is right, where is freedom? No one chooses the wrong, Jason Solo. Uncertainty sets you free.
Jason thought about that for a long time. Die at home, he murmured.
You're dead already. You have been these many months. You have nearly completed your passage through the lands of the dead. Now is time not for death, but for new life. You are healed, Jason Solo. Arise and walk.
Why should I?
Because you can, of course. Why else would anyone bother to get up?
I don't know.
He closed his eyes again. It doesn't matter whether I get up or sit here until I starve. Nothing matters. Nothing means anything.
Not even your brother's death?
He shrugged listlessly. Life, death, all was one. One with the Force. He said, the Force doesn't care.
Don't you care?
Whether I care doesn't matter either. Corners of her mouth tricked up and down.
Does it matter to you?
After a long silence, he sighed.
Yes. Yes, it does. But so what? Sure, I care, but who am I?
She gave a shrug so subtle it was almost a shiver.
That's always been the question, yes?
But you never have an answer.
I do have an answer, she said kindly. But it's my answer, not yours. You will find no truth in me.
Roar. She gathered her four opposable fingers into a point and lightly tapped his chest. Right on the center. Right over the void left by the slave seed. Right over the point mass of his own personal event horizon. As though knocking on a door. Down in that void, there was quiet. There was calm. The eye of the storm inside him. He threw his mind into the calm, quiet void. Let the quiet calm swell to envelop everything he was. The storm blew away. The black hole swallowed itself. He was not alone in the quiet calm. Here was the Force, the living connection that bound him to everything that is, that ever has been, that ever will be. Here, too, was the Vong life. 12 Yuuzhan Vong warriors who now filed into the room. And the breathless anticipation of triumph that shone through Noma Nor as he entered behind them.
The meaninglessness and despair from which you suffer, Noma Nor said silkily, is the inevitable result of your bankrupt religion. This Force of yours, it has no purpose. It merely is what it is, corrupt with the rot that infects this whole galaxy. There is a reason to get up, and you can find it. I can share it with you.
He's been listening, Jason thought. Of course, Vergere would have led him here.
Now is the time, Nomenor continued, for you to leave behind your useless force. Now is the time to leave behind your life's darkness and delusion. Now is the time to take your place in the pure light of truth.
From within one of those voluminous sleeves, Nomenor produced a lightsaber. He lowered his head in obeisance and offered up the deactivated lightsaber to Jason on outstretched palms. Jason recognized the hand grip's design. It was Anakin's. He looked at Vergère. She returned his gaze steadily.
Choose and act.
I could pick that up, he thought, and kill them all. Is that who I am? Is that who I want to be? He looked at Nomenor. The executor said,
take up the blasphemous weapon and slay, or choose life. Choose to learn the truth. Choose to teach the truth. To share truth with your people. Let me teach you the truth you can share. The truth of the God you are.
He stared at Vergère and nodded her. He gazed at his own reflection on the glossy black curves of her bottomless eyes. He gazed silently, expressionlessly, until he felt himself reflect the reflection. He became pure surface, gleaming over an infinite well of darkness, a mirror for every image of night. He filled himself with stillness. When he was so still that he could feel the universe wheel around the axis he had become, he stood up. Nomenor hissed soft triumph.
You will become a star, a sun, the sun, and you will fill the galaxy with the light of the true way.
All right, Jason said. A cold, still surface. Flawless, unrippled by weakness or conscience or humanity. The camp ships had been popping out of hyperspace for months now. The camp ships were kilometers thick, roughly globular, vast, random, glued-together masses of hexagonal chambers that ranged from the size of a footlocker to the size of a carrier's flight deck. These ships had no food supplies, life support, or usable engines. All these ships had was people. Millions of people. Hundreds of millions. Survivors from the conquest of Coruscant. To construct cities big enough to shelter hundreds of millions of people was clearly impossible in the wartime economy. But there was another option. They became orbital refugee camps, hence the name. Life in the camp ships was hard. Everyone suffered, and very few were allowed to leave. No one talked about the real reason the refugees were sequestered aboard the camp ships. It was this. Interplanetary space was the ideal sanitary cordon. Many worlds had received, courtesy of the Yuuzhan Vong, unpleasant surprises along with refugees allowed dirtside. All refugee populations included unguessable numbers of spies, saboteurs, peace brigaders, collaborators of all sorts, and sometimes worse. Ganner Rysoed had spent weeks chasing the rumor. By the time he reached the numbered curtain that passed for an apartment door inside the million-celled honeycomb of the camp ship, he was so tired he couldn't even remember what system he was in. Ganner didn't look much like Ganner these days. Gone was the flashy blouse and tight leather trousers, the gleam of gold piping, the tall, immaculately polished boots. Instead, he wore a shapeless tunic of nondescript brown fabric over baggy gray leggings that hid his boots, now scuffed and bearing the dirt of dozens of worlds. This wasn't exactly a disguise, but he was different as he could get from the Ganner he had always been. Here, for example, outside the chamber, The old Ganner would have swept aside the curtain with a flourish and posed, dramatically backlit in the doorway. Now, instead, he leaned back against the pebbly wall beside the door and let himself slide down. He settled in, sitting, as though he were just another refugee, taking a nap at the side of a corridor. He let his head drift forward and his eyes fall closed while he reached into the Force, seeking feelings from the chamber beyond. He felt humans inside the chamber, with enough Force presence that there might have been five of them, but Ganner couldn't quite resolve the Force sensation into distinct individuals. He frowned, squeezing his eyes more tightly shut, concentrating. It was almost as though inside the chamber there was one person with five different personalities, or that all five of them participated in some kind of group consciousness. He sighed and got up. From the moment he had begun chasing this rumor, he had sort of, somehow, half known he would end up like this. Alone, no backup, no one even knowing enough about where he was to mount a search for him when he did not return. No one would ever know what had happened to him. Well, one person would be able to guess, but he didn't think she'd care. He remembered the dark flame in Jaina's eyes when he told her of the rumor. "Another stupid lie," she'd said, "and you're an idiot for believing it." He tried to tell her how important this could be to the morale of the whole New Republic. "Don't you get it? He's a hero. It'd be like you rose from the dead, Jaina. It'd be magical. It'd be a miracle. It'd give us hope again." "We don't need hope," Jaina had told him. "We need more ships, we need better weapons, and we need Jedi. We don't need you wasting everybody's time on fantasies." Ganner had persisted. "But what if it's not a fantasy? Your mother still claims he's alive." "My mother," Jaina had said, a slow, ancient weight on her words, a weight too vast, too old for a teenage girl, "lost both her sons on the same day. She hasn't gotten over it. She probably never will."
"She has a right to know."
"The Vong kept Jason alive after they captured him. For a long time. They kept him alive so they could hurt him. I could feel it." Tears had sparked in Jaina's eyes, but her voice was hard enough to cut transparasteel. "I felt Jason die. In one instant he was just gone. Blasted out of existence like he'd never existed at all. I felt it. If he were alive, I wouldn't need you to come and tell me about it. I'd know." Her hands had clenched to fists, white-knuckled, pressed against her sides, and her lips drew back over her teeth. "Don't talk to me about this garbage ever again. And don't talk to anyone else either. Anyone."
"Hey, Jaina, it's okay," he'd said. "I won't tell anybody, I promise. Don't get mad."
She had folded her arms and turned her back to him.
"Get out of my sight."
Ganner had walked unsteadily away, shaken. Later, he reflected.
"Well, you know, I only promised I wouldn't talk about it. I never promised I wouldn't look into it."
That was when he had set out, alone. The old Ganner might have done the same, he occasionally thought, with a certain melancholy resignation. It would have made a great story. A story about the kind of Jedi Ganner had always wanted to be. The lone hero, searching the vast reaches of the galaxy on a quest he cannot share. Braving unimaginable dangers and facing incalculable odds. That had been Ganner's fantasy self. The cool, calm, dangerous hero. The kind people trade stories about in voices hushed with awe and all that adolescent crap. But when you start trying to be a hero, you're in a whole galaxy of trouble. Lust for glory can become a sickness, a disease that Bacta cannot cure. In its final stages, it's all you can think about. At the end, you don't even care about actually being a hero. You just want people to think you are. Ganner leaned close to the curtain that served as the chamber's door.
"Excuse me," he called softly.
"Yeah, hello. Does anybody here speak basic?"
"Go away."
The voice that answered from beyond the curtain sounded oddly, vaguely, just barely familiar.
There's nothing for you here.
Ganner gently tugged a gap between the curtain and the wall.
I'm sorry to intrude, he said. I won't bother you for long. I just have a question for you. One question, that's all. And then I'll leave you alone.
From inside, a middle-aged, heavy-set human stared at him stonily.
Go away.
In a moment I will, Ganner said apologetically. But I understand that someone who lives here claims he saw Jason Solo alive on Coruscant after the invasion. Can I talk to whoever that might be?